Hi, I'm Stephanie Lemick, and this is Building Trauma-Informed Workplaces. I am so excited to have a good friend here joining us today. Rita, welcome to the podcast. I'm so glad to have you, and I would love if you would introduce yourself to our listeners.
Sounds great. Thanks so much. It's so great to be here. Love having our conversations together, and I think this is such an important topic. I'm Rita Ramakrishnan. I am a fractional chief people officer and also an executive and team coach. I work primarily with leaders in the technology space and primarily also with neurodivergent leaders. That's one of my subspecialties. So it's really great to be here and engage in this dialogue.
I'm so excited. Rita and I, we've known each other for a couple years, and we connected in person finally earlier this year at Transform. We got to snuggle some puppies together. It was a great time. Rita is also great at helping me open my mind. And, you know, as someone who is a trauma-informed workplace practitioner, that's really important. So I'm so grateful for your leadership, for helping me kind of explore and understand new things. And I'm really excited for what we're going to chat about today, which is something that's really important, especially when we think about building workplaces where everyone feels included and supported, and that's neurodiversity at work. And I shared with you, this is actually something I really want to learn more about, because I feel like, you know, we talk about it in a cursory way, there's so much more information that, you know, I feel like I could understand and be better at what I do in terms of creating space for others in the workplace. So I really appreciate you coming and joining us to chat more about neurodiversity.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm a definition girly, as I always say. So I love to start from a place of shared understanding. So if folks aren't familiar with the term neurodiversity, or, you know, just to make sure we're all coming from the same place, you know, when we say neurodiversity, when we think about neurodiversity at work, what are we talking about? What does that bring up for you?
Yeah, so neurodiversity most often refers to minds that don't work in a neurotypical or regular way. So when you think about yourself as, you know, a person that takes inputs, processes them, and then puts out information in new ways and synthesizes it, the way in which a typical person would do that, the inputs that they get and the outputs that come from them tend to look a little bit different for a neurodiverse person, because the way in which they're processing that information looks a little bit different as well. A lot of folks rely on diagnoses to sort of figure out whether they're neurodivergent. And so this kind of captures the whole family of folks with ADHD, dyslexia, synesthesia, anything that sort of falls within that space, oftentimes HSP, which stands for highly sensitive person, anything that refers essentially to you taking information in a very different way, processing it differently, and the outputs that come from you are a little bit different, that's a person who's neurodivergent.
Awesome. That's amazing. I love the way you frame that. That is very easy to understand, kind of this term that gets thrown out a lot that I think sometimes you don't get enough context. I would love if you're open to sharing, you know, how did you get involved in doing work where you're coaching individuals, passionate about supporting individuals with neurodiversity?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say I kind of fell into this work. I am part of a contingent of women who got diagnosed as neurodivergent a little bit later in life. For me, it really came to fruition in university, where there was actually a clear definition for the things that I'd been experiencing. So I was diagnosed as having ADHD and synesthesia and a couple of other things here and there, but it basically started assigning language for things that I thought I was alone in. And by assigning language, you realize you're kind of part of a community. The diagnostic criteria when we're thinking about ADHD or dyslexia or some of these other things tend to look very different for young girls than boys. So when you think about little boys running around with ADD, ADHD, they've had a little bit longer before they become an adult to regulate and to say, these are the things that that arise for me. These are some of my challenges and my strengths that arise out of this diagnosis. And these are the things that I'm going to do to support that. For a lot of women, because the diagnostic criteria is different, they are getting diagnosed a lot later in life. And so they're having to contend. Many of us have been, you know, highly functioning in the workplace, but we start to notice these behaviors and ascribe them to something. And we think, oh, is there a way to make my life or my work a little bit better or easier by acknowledging that I have these traits and putting strategies and tools in for myself. So that was a journey I started when I was in university and I finally got diagnosed. And it came about in a series of experiments for myself. So thinking through tools and strategies for myself, but also in engaging with communities of other folks that were experiencing these things, because you can kind of learn from each other. So that was my journey. And then later I became a leadership executive and team coach. And I realized that the modalities that we use for neurodivergent clients is a little bit different than a neurotypical client. The challenges that they face look a little bit different, and the tools that they might use are also a little bit different. So the purpose of any coaching engagement, any type of leadership coaching, is really centered around the question, how can I bring my best self to this workplace? What does delivering my best work look like, and how do I partner in the best way? And so for folks who are neurodivergent, the ways in which you answer those questions look a little bit different. And so I just started engaging with clients, or I guess I drew clients to me with some of these similar diagnoses, and it's just been a journey that we've been on together.
That's amazing. And I love the framing around the sense of community. You know, community is something we talk about a lot when we talk about a trauma-informed workplace. We talk about the concept of peer support. And it is. It's so important to have other people can relate versus, you know, experiencing something and feel like you're experiencing something alone.
Yeah, very much so. And it's a community of learning as well, right? Figuring out what works for you is a series of experiments, and you don't know what to try sometimes until you hear what other folks have tried for them. What works for me might be different for someone else, but in engaging around these problems together, we start to feel not alone, right? We have folks in the foxhole with us, and that sense of community and that sense of belonging is a huge motivator for us. But there's also this element of crowdsourcing ideas and tools and strategies that can really be helpful and accelerate your pace to answer those questions for yourself.
So tell me a little bit, I think, you know, this question comes up for me almost, you know, first and foremost, when I hear, you know, neurodiversity at work. What do you think, you know, the workplace, society, you know, assumptions get wrong about individuals showing up at work with neurodiversity?
Yeah. I think with the increased focus on DEI in the past, I don't know, decade or so, there's been a big push towards acceptance and almost tolerance for these differences within ourselves. But I think what we're kind of missing right now is it's not about tolerance, it's about harnessing the power of it. We know that companies that are as diverse as the communities that they support and the client bases they're trying to attract do better than companies that are more homogenous. And neurodivergence is just one more of these things that companies, if they know how to evoke awareness amongst their neurodivergent population and tap into those resources, they can soar to new heights. They can achieve more and better outcomes with these folks on the front lines.
I mean, even when you were sharing your, you know, the definition of neurodiversity up front, I thought, wow, someone thinking differently than me. What a superpower. What an amazing way to find new solutions, to come up with something better than we can come up with alone, or if we're all thinking about something in the same way. And I think it's wonderful you frame that in how do we create the space? How do we leverage the differences to build on and create those strengths in the workplace, not only for individuals, but also to your point, you're building, you know, real business power with leveraging these differences as well. Have you seen an organization or even just an individual leader do that really well? And can you think of any examples, not to put you on the spot, but any examples of, you know, what that kind of inclusion and leveraging the strength looks like?
Yeah. So I would say when we think about the organizational strength, I think about it in terms of teams. Oftentimes, if we take a look at a regular person's schedule, you're in a number of different team meetings throughout the week. And most team meetings tend to follow a fairly linear agenda. We're going to talk about this, then we're going to talk about this, then we're going to talk about this. Even when you think about, for example, a marketing campaign and coming up with that together, you'll start with the data and then you'll sort of process it and move through in a linear capacity. When you have neurodivergent folks, let's use ADHD as an example. what ADHD is the traffic cop that typically regulates logic in your brain is operating a little bit differently, or you just don't have a traffic cop. So the speed at which you're processing information and the direction of that information processing isn't linear. And there's a lot of power that comes from nonlinear thinking. And so organizations that I've seen truly harnessing the power of neurodivergence are ones where they create space for bigger, broader brainstorming capabilities, right? So instead of going at it in a linear capacity, actually corner off time for unstructured thinking together, whether that's people writing on sticky notes and throwing things on the board and then taking it all in, or letting someone with neurodivergence run the agenda for a while and go down the pathway of nonlinear thinking. We're gonna go from X back to A, but in doing so, you might find new pathways or new information or new solutions that you hadn't thought of before. So that's one example. And then the other thing I would say is individual tools and regulation. So folks who are in leadership positions who know they're neurodivergent, putting in place specific tools around what helps them operate a little bit better, whether that's things to regulate the environment around them, or ways in which they regulate or create space in their schedule for specific activities. Those are other ways that I think companies can offer neurodivergent leaders the freedom to really drive greater impact.
I love a good brainstorm session. I love I think that's something that maybe not everyone loves it, but again, like you said, creating that space is really helpful. To kind of piggyback on that, do you think there's something that is really common in, our modern workplace or current workplace that kind of works against being inclusive or supporting, neurodivergent thought processes, neurodivergent folks being able to show up as their authentic selves at work? Is there anything, to watch out for folks who want to be cognizant of leveraging that superpower and also, creating space for their team members?
It's hard to say just because neurodiversity looks so different for individuals. And while we might have some things in common, the things that might hold us back are going to be a little bit different for each person. One thing I will say is lack of decision-making philosophy and clarity can be pretty detrimental, or not being explicit about it. So I know teams that in the past have said, we come together, we debate a thing, we make a decision, and then we leave. And everyone is sort of committed to that thing. And I'm a big fan of debate and disagree and commit, but in sort of forcing people to process information ahead of time, come in, debate, and come to a decision immediately, a neurodivergent person may not think in that way. They might need more time to process that information. They might need to be able to process out loud or brainstorm out loud with another individual for a period of time before they come to a conclusion that they're comfortable with. And so by rushing to make these decisions in these very fixed mindsets, in these very fixed ways, you are not necessarily harnessing the power of that neurodivergent mind on your team. You're not giving them the space to operate at their best. So the ways in which you make decisions, it's always worth it to talk about those ways of working as team members or even as a leadership team to say, how does each of us like to perform? Where do we go under moments of stress, right? And what are the habits that kind of come up on that? How do we create a space for each of us to be successful? What are our individual needs and how do we solve for those in a community space?
And that's something that supports everyone. That is, creating space, asking, what works best for you. That supports everyone. And I love solutions like that because it's so interesting to me, especially as I've been doing this work around trauma-informed workplaces. So much of what we do to support someone who has neurodiversity, whether it's someone who has, trauma responses that are showing up at work, so much of what we do to support them also supports everyone else too. And it's like, well, why don't we just do all of this stuff anyway?
Right. Some of these things that we think of as necessary because we have a neurodivergent team member, honestly, it's just good housekeeping in general. And I always love, anytime I'm in a team coaching environment, one of the things I like talking about is explicit and implicit agreements. And we naturally have implicit thoughts or ways of working that we assume everyone else is comfortable with. By creating space to say, let's actually make this an explicit agreement. How often do we want to come together and brainstorm? Or how much time do you need to be able to process information? Or what are the ways in which we can come together as a team and support our ways of working so that our decision quality and our decision speed is the best it can be.
We make things really hard sometimes at work, but then sometimes like the solution is so simple. It's like right there. I love that so much. What other advice do you have for maybe managers, leaders, whether they know that they have a neurodiverse team member working with them, or, you know, if they just want to be prepared in the event that, you know, someone is neurodiverse and they, you know, either haven't shared that, may not be aware themselves. What advice do you have for managers and leaders on being, you know, thoughtful in the workplace and kind of creating that space for individuals?
I would say, first and foremost, operate from a place of curiosity versus needing to have all the answers. Keep in mind, some of the folks on your team may not necessarily identify as neurodiverse or may not know that they're neurodiverse, but they can, when asked the right questions, express needs that help them operate better in the workplace. And so start from the questions of, hey, when have been those moments where you've been most successful? What was in place there? How can I support you to make sure that you're able to deliver your best self and your best work here? So start with curiosity as one. I think we tend to have the tendency to over-pathologize. And so we assume when someone shares a diagnosis, I have ADHD, okay, are you on medication? Are you on this? Are you on that? It's not necessarily our place to diagnose other people or to take their diagnoses and say, these are therefore the solutions. I would still go back to, okay, great. So thank you so much for sharing that. Are there things that we could be doing differently in the workplace here to be able to support you? And some of those things might not have to do with behavior. It actually might have to do with environment. There's a whole body of work and study out there right now thinking about, you know, even just like paint colors and types of lighting that are going to be more conducive for folks to lower their anxiety levels or to support folks who are neurodivergent in the workplace. So thinking about that, I would say if you're on any sort of facilities team or people team with oversight over your office space, is sort of thinking about that as well. So I would say like those are sort of the main things. Operate from a place of curiosity. Don't over-pathologize. Create space for experimentation. So sometimes an individual will say, I want to try working in this way and see how that goes. And if it doesn't work, that's okay. We're going to experiment and bring something else in as well. I would also say, don't try to necessarily single that person out. If you're going to ask them a question, it's worth creating space for the entire team to connect and say, are there ways that we could be operating in differently to evoke excellence out of all of us?
I love that. Also, wow, there are like different paint colors that make people less anxious. I need to know what those are for me personally.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite books on this topic is Divergent Mind by Janara Nuremberg. And she sort of talks about, and there have been occupational therapists that sort of experiment with, hey, if you are experiencing these things in the workplace, what can we create from an environmental perspective? Or what are the environments that you are most successful in? And how do we optimize that for you? Particularly in a world where we're primarily hybrid, folks have a lot more control over their individual spaces, but we're still coming together as teams. Even, you know, fully remote organizations are oftentimes bringing their people in together at some sort of regular cadence. And to think about the spaces that you bring them in, how you even design that day, when you can maybe give people time away from others as well to decompress, because sometimes it can be really overwhelming for someone who's neurodivergent to go from a place of isolation or smaller community to an environment with hundreds of people. Thinking about these things and how to create space for everyone to sort of be able to self-regulate is a really important consideration.
I think that's one thing a lot of organizations, heck, even a lot of like conferences get wrong, and it's tough to see them still getting it wrong. I'm a pretty extroverted, like, let's go, like, kind of person. And a lot of times these events will be overwhelming to me. And I'm like, are we really creating space for everyone? Yeah. And then that becomes frustrating for me too, because, you know, like I said, the variety, the diversity of thought and understanding is, to me, like, that's a superpower. Like, thank God someone thinks differently than me. I want to be able to engage with those folks in a meaningful way and when they're comfortable. And when we constantly kind of, we recycle the same events that we've been doing for years and years, that aren't inclusive in a variety of ways, like whether it's, you know, the happy hours with no non-alcoholic beverages for people who choose not to partake, or whether it's, you know, big flashy lights, lots of like wild things going on, or, you know, back to back to back, you know, talks, you know, discussions, trainings without really, you know, creating space, we miss out on so many amazing voices, ideas in our community, and we really don't need to.
Yeah, I agree. And something that I tend to recommend a lot to my individual coaching clients, but also to managers who have neurodivergent teams, mindfulness is a really important part of being able to connect with yourself and self-regulate, right? Understanding what your body goes through under moments of stress and what the outputs might look like then allows you to connect with yourself in those moments and say, okay, right now I'm experiencing this. Like my hands are starting to shake, which means my anxiety is up, which means I need to excuse myself. The example I like to give, a lot of folks rely on habit stacking. So when you're self-regulating or you know things that work, like tagging that in throughout your day, attaching it to other habits that you already have can be helpful. But the other really important thing is creating rituals. So I used to have a job that was incredibly stressful. Oftentimes I was on planes, trains, and automobiles to Europe. And when you're in a new city, everyone from that city wants to come and talk to you and you want that. But you also know, I would know when my body was unable to self-regulate, when I needed to take space. And I knew roughly that would happen around, you know, 3 p.m. every day. So I would block off my calendar, TTFR, which was tea time for Rita. And that meant at 3 p.m. every day, I would go to a tea room alone. I would have like a scone and a cup of tea alone, decompress, and then I could come back and be my best self again. So creating space for folks to set those rituals up for themselves, to have that flexibility in their calendar to do what's right for them, but also, you know, cultivating those awareness practices as a manager, as a leader, checking in with your team. How's everyone feeling right now? Where is that sensation? Where is that feeling? What does that mean for you? What would help you be most successful in that moment? Mindful leadership, I think, is something that's often lacking in the workplace.
I love tea time for Rita. That's so amazing. And you know what I really love about it? It's, I think back to when I was working in an office in a corporate job, and it was just like, go, 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 like slammed, exhausted by the end of the day. Like I was ready to have conversations with no one. Certainly there was the impact for me, but I also think, you know, reflecting back and hearing you talk about, you know, your time you made for yourself, really not great leadership either to showcase always going, never stopping, never taking a break. And I think for some of us, I think for me, it would have been very powerful for someone to tell me you're not leading the best you can because you're showing to your team, go, 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 never take a break. And when you very visibly take breaks, you honor that time on your calendar, not only are you doing what's right for you, but you're also creating the space for others to see, oh, this is okay. This works. Like this is acceptable. And I think there's a lot of power in that as well.
Very much so. It's the set the example is really, really important. Also be aware of the signs. You know, there's a lot of data that supports this as well, but a lot of women who have ADHD tend to be high, like they tend to be very high performing in the workplace, and they have a really hard time saying no to things. They'll continue to take on more and more work, and they can move between tasks quite fluidly and deliver really well. But there is that tipping point where they take too much and then they shut down. And so it's cultivating awareness in yourself for when you're reaching that moment, but also as a manager, it is your job to help manage that work and to load balance effectively. And so if you think someone is taking on too much, they're getting close to shutdown or burnout, engaging thoughtfully in that conversation with them and letting them know they have choices, they have options, and they have support. Those small little check-ins can make a world of difference.
Absolutely. I love to you highlight high performance, that a lot of individuals who may be neurodivergent, may have non-visible diversity, yeah, can be really high performing. And I hate to say it, But, you know, as a fractional CPO, a people leader, you probably know this as well as I do. A lot of times in the workplace, we're paying a lot of attention to not our high performers. We are paying attention. We're like, oh, we've got this person in place. They're a workhorse. They always get things done. They do a great job. I don't have to worry about them. And we have to be so careful to not overlook that, because it, you know, that person, first of all, it's just the right thing to do to support all of your team members, but also that person may be navigating something they haven't shared, they aren't aware of, or they might not feel comfortable saying no. I know one thing I've started talking about a lot is how people pleasing in the workplace, always saying yes, is actually sometimes a trauma response. So, you know, not everyone who engages in people pleasing in the workplace, you know, has that as a trauma response. I do, though, and I know a lot of others do. And so when we tap in, when we look and say, hey, wait, this person's taking on too much, or hey, is something else going on here? I love curiosity, engage in curiosity with our team, and don't overlook those high performers. Don't let them get to a state of, you know, freeze or burnout, because that doesn't help anyone.
You know, we talk so often about talent density right now. Yeah. It's such a big buzzword in the market. And quite frankly, especially in times where belts are tightening, you want to make sure you're getting the absolute max value out of every seat in the organization. Mm-hmm. You want the best talent in every seat. But with talent density, needs to come a conversation around supporting both high performers and low performers. A lot of folks focus on that bottom tier and how to manage them out, or whether they're worth investment to develop and get their skills developed. But every single leader at your organization should know who's in the top 10 to 20% of your organization. You should know and have thoughtful conversations with their managers about what motivates them. Do they like public praise or private praise? What are their ways of working? How do they like being rewarded? Do they prefer something like some extra time off, or what is their reward structure? But also the question is, how do we support them so that one, they don't burn out, and two, they're ready for that next challenge and that next level? And I don't think enough organizations are engaging in that proactive conversation around their high performers. And it's a real tragedy. It's a real mess.
It is a huge mess for so many reasons. Absolutely. I want to pivot a little bit, and I want to, you know, for individuals who are listening, who are neurodivergent or think they may be neurodivergent, what's your advice for them? You know, thinking about whether it's exploring a formal diagnosis, whether it's engaging in coaching, whether it's, you know, how do I navigate the workplace with neurodiversity? You know, what advice would you give to those folks?
Yeah, I'd say the number one thing that you should think about investing in is, and whatever this looks like, invest in knowing yourself and invest in self-awareness and self-regulation. Now, you can do that with the support of a coach. A lot of folks start this journey and they want to start getting assessments done, whether you go and do clinical assessments, or even if you want to focus on the workplace and you say, I want to do a Hogan assessment or a leadership circle profile or DISC or something. Get as much information from within yourself and what you feel and what you observe in yourself, but try to get some of those outside perspectives as well. Think about when you're at your absolute best and when you're at your absolute worst. And then think about, for those times you're at your absolute worst, what's missing for you? Start to think about those ingredients. What could your workplace do for you or have for you, or what could change to make things a little bit better for you? Again, this is one of those things that it's so hard sometimes to start from a place of I'm alone in this world. So the most important thing I would say is look for and find community. There are lots of groups out there that are available for neurodivergent individuals. I will also say group coaching is a particularly useful modality. So not just one-on-one coaching where you're going through your own behavior, but really being with a community of others that operate a little bit similar to you and can sort of crowdsource ideas and you know, supportive suggestions could be really helpful. But I would say, like, the two most important things are get to know yourself real well, mentally and physically. That mind-body connection is really important. And then find yourself a community. And then I would say, start to think about needs, right? What are needs that you have that are being met? And so you're at your prime, you're at your best in those moments. And what are needs that may not be being met right now? And how could they be met? what investment could you make, your organization make, your family make, of time or energy, whatever that looks like, to help get you operating at your prime.
I'd love to talk a little bit too, you know, obviously you do coaching, group coaching. I would love to, if you're willing to share kind of what your approach to coaching is and kind of who you are as a coach for folks, you know, whether they're neurodivergent or not, who might be interested in learning more about the coaching options you offer.
I'm primarily a leadership coach. So I work with leaders to help them sort of figure out how to operate in their best way, how to best support their teams and drive the greatest amount of value, both personally and professionally. I also am a certified team coach, and I primarily work with executive teams, sometimes with those who are neurodivergent there as well. And team coaching is a little bit different because it's really thinking about the team as a unit and saying, how do we get the best out of the folks that we have here to maximize our impact? I've recently started offering group coaching as well. Group coaching is basically cohort based. So you want to group people up, and I don't love groups bigger than like six to eight, but folks who are sort of at similar stages or in similar career paths, kind of getting them together. So you're engaging in thoughtful questions and some of that same exploration that you do in individual coaching, but you're also crowdsourcing ideas and you're part of that community. So I'm currently creating communities for in-house legal professionals because those are folks that deal with a lot of kind of crazy things. And it's really hard to understand what it's like unless you're there as well. So yes. I have a few of those groups being formed right now. And I do create groups for neurodivergent leaders. I think, like I said, it's so important to feel that sense of community. And whether you do that in a group coaching setting or you find communities of practice outside of that, actually, a lot of companies now are having ERGs focused on neurodiversity, which is a really great place to go. Just thinking through what's going to be most useful for you.
For someone looking to learn more about neurodiversity, whether it is just for their own information like me or someone who maybe wants to explore learning more about themselves, you know, and they identify as neurodiverse, what are some resources that you love that you might share with us?
I would say in terms of resources, there's plenty of books out there. I named one of them, which is Divergent Mind by Janara Nirenberg, that really helps hone in and define what neurodivergence could look like for folks. There are plenty of books out there. I'm actually putting together a book list as we speak. So I'll post that when I can for folks who are curious. I would say finding communities. So for example, within Chief, which is a senior, it's a community for senior women in business, there is a group focused on neurodivergence. And so other neurodivergent chiefs can come together and you're sharing information, you're sharing knowledge, and you're really building a community of practice around that. That's incredibly helpful. Within your alma mater. So for example, I went through the coaching program at Georgetown. There are also smaller communities within that of practitioners and folks who are neurodivergent. So that's been really helpful for me. The best resource, honestly, has just been meeting other folks who also self-identify or have been diagnosed as neurodivergent and creating space for those conversations. Going out to coffee once in a while with those people can be very nourishing and very supportive in terms of giving you ideas, but also sort of refilling your cup and reminding you that you're not alone in this.
I love that. That's amazing. Rita, for folks who want to follow along with your work, maybe learn more about whether it's your, you know, fractional services or your coaching services, where can they find you? Where can they follow you on social media as well?
Sure. So I'm somewhat active on LinkedIn. You can find me. My handle is Rita Ram. And I would say I have a website. So it's ixana.com. Ixana is my firm. Ixana is Sanskrit for, it actually has a dual meaning in Sanskrit. It means to look and to see deeply. And it also means to look after or care for someone. And so that's sort of the philosophy that I have both in my coaching work and in my consulting work. I like working with folks, deeply understanding what their needs are and working with them to get those needs met. So if you're curious, feel free to hop on. We have a LinkedIn page under Ixana Consulting as well. And if you're curious, even if you just want to have a quick conversation or understand more resources that are specific to you, feel free to set up some time. I have a link on my website. You can grab 30 minutes at any moment.
Amazing. Perfect. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners before we wrap up?
This is an evolving area of practice, right? We don't have all the answers now. I don't know that we're always going to have all the answers anyways. So I would say just stay curious, stay present, stay open. And if you do identify as neurodivergent, know that you're not alone and find ways to engage with the community. I have never met someone who's regretted it.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was such a fantastic conversation. I've got a book to add to my reading list. My husband will not be pleased. My bookshelf is out of control, but this sounds like one worth adding. Very excited that you're doing the work you're doing. Everyone, thank you so much for listening in. Until next time, be well.